For years, especially during the past election cycle, right-wing elements have stoked fears that the government would come into your life and say, we know who you are, we know where you are, and we're coming to take your guns. The notion has been dismissed as far-fetched, but last week it was revealed that the Honolulu Police Department has been, in effect, doing just that. For much of the past year, HPD has been sending letters to medical marijuana users, giving them 30 days to voluntarily give up their firearms. That policy is now under review, but questions remain. Are privacy rights being violated? Are people on a medical database being placed under some sort of surveillance? We're asking listeners to weigh in, and the numbers are 1-877-941-3689 for Neighbor Islands and beyond, and 941-3689 on Oahu. With me and News Director Bill Dorman in our studio are Carl Berquist, Executive Director of the Drug Policy Forum of Hawaii, Harvey Gerwig, President of the Hawaii Rifle Association, and Stephen Levinson, an attorney and a current member of the Honolulu Police Commission, former Associate Justice of the Hawaii Supreme Court. He is not representing the Police Commission as a whole in his capacity here today. And thank you all for being with us. We've already got some callers on the line, but I think maybe the first thing to do is set the stage. Harvey, how long have you been aware of this letter?
Well, this newest version is only up in the past week, but they have been exercising taking people's guns away if they were to apply for a new permit once the medical marijuana cards were actually usable. But this is in the last week that this, I believe they sent out 30 letters. That's the number that I heard from other media.
What kind of responses have you gotten from your members?
You can imagine, not pleased. I have gotten a ton of calls from people very upset that when they take medicine, now all of a sudden that medicine is causing them to lose a Second Amendment constitutional core right. And it is a medicine. The state decided that marijuana, for those that get the card, is a medicine. So if they take an opiate, do they come take their drug, take their guns? No. But with a medical marijuana card, they do.
Carl Berquist is the executive director of the Drug Policy Forum of Hawaii. What was your response, Carl?
It's very similar to Harvey's. We were aware that permits were being denied generally. We were not aware that letters were being issued in this fashion and also requesting the surrender of weapons. It's for an organization like ours, it's always a matter of prioritization, and we're trying to look out for patients' rights in general. We have heard a few complaints about this, but now that the policy seems to be broader, we're hearing more complaints. And generally, it's really about the stigmatization of these patients for taking a medicine. And from our perspective, the state is sending a really mixed message. On the one hand, we're hearing since 2000 that this is a medicine, as Harvey said. Go through the process, register with the state, get a card, you're in a database. It will only be made available to law enforcement for specific purposes. We were not aware that this was one of them. So it's just really hard to understand why the state, on the one hand, is saying this is a medicine. On the other hand, is if you take this medicine, you are de facto just not allowed to have a weapon.
Stephen, what was your response? You were out of town. This is kind of being sprung on you, and we did specify that you're not speaking as a member of the police commission. But what kind of initial reaction do you have to something like this?
Well, as you say, Chris, I was out of town until yesterday afternoon. In fact, out of the country, and so my only pipeline into the news was via email. So I'm aware of the story that ran, I believe, in the November 28 Honolulu Star Advertiser generally describing what we've been talking about, and that's the first I knew of it. I can't speak on behalf of the commission. Right. I'm simply one commissioner. But this commissioner was unaware of the issue at all. And so we've never discussed it. It's going to be discussed at our meeting tomorrow because I asked that the e-blast that was sent by the Drug Policy Forum be distributed to the other commissioners. And I rather suspect that we'll be raising the issue with Chief Ballard tomorrow. But as I sit here now, I'm playing catch up and I'm trying to understand what's going on. A good place to start, I think, would be the law. And whatever view one might have of the desirability of the action that the police department apparently has been taking since October 2016 in one form or another, it seems to be undertaking to enforce the law. I'm looking at the statute that governs and regulates ownership and possession of firearms and when that is prohibited. And the first section of the first subsection of Hawaii Revised Statutes 134-7, which is the operative chapter and section, says that no person who is prohibited from possessing firearms or ammunition shall own, possess, or control any firearm or ammunition. Now, apparently, a marijuana user is a person prohibited from possessing firearms or ammunition under federal law, as I get it.
That's the justification.
Sure.
For that.
And I mean, if I could just quickly jump in, I think here what the Hawaii Revised Statutes is saying is we are deferring entirely to federal law. We are not taking ownership of our state law. Our state law says that medical cannabis is legal. Instead, they're just pointing to federal law saying unlawful use of controlled substances. And, you know, we're already not quite in sync with federal law and medical cannabis in general. So my question is, why in this case are we so deferential to federal law? Is there a particularly good justification to stigmatize these patients? No, there isn't a good policy reason. And it's really problematic that they're being lumped together in the Attorney General's reports saying that these are mentally incompetent or mentally impaired individuals when that's not necessarily the case for absolutely the great majority of these patients.
Well, I quite agree with Carl that the questions that he raises are legitimate. I'm simply beginning with what the law says.
With law. Gentlemen, let me just interrupt for a moment. Larry from Mo'ili'ili is a former medical cannabis card holder on the line with us. And Larry, in terms of worried about losing a civil right.
Yeah, I've actually let it lapse because of concerns about the Second Amendment issues. I've done nothing to trigger confiscation, like applying for an open long gun permit. But, you know, that may come up in the future. As I'm no longer a current holder of a medical marijuana card, do I have to worry about, say, because they declare that this is perjury if I sign this firearms form in certain circumstances. I don't believe that should apply to me or us.
How long ago did you turn in your card?
7 years.
Oh, okay, because there's a one-year lag period between giving up the card or letting it expire and your rights magically reappearing. So 7 years ago, you're probably okay.
If I discover by applying for an open permit that that's not the case, that seems sort of risky.
Unknown at this point.
But that concern about sort of the idea of, again, access to medical information, this whole issue of privacy, privacy of medical records and access to that. Carl, your thoughts on how this is an issue, part of the issue that we're
sure,
discussing?
Absolutely.
Tonight.
And the main reason for access to this patient registry is for law enforcement to verify whether a patient is a person is a patient or not. And that's an affirmative action. So you would have to have someone fill out this form saying they are a patient. And then you would check it. Prior to October 2017, there was no such question on the HPD letter. So the question then is, how did HPD determine that someone might be a patient if they hadn't voluntarily, you know, stated that? So that raises a question of, were they accessing this database to verify people who had not themselves volunteered they were patients? So that's one of the questions. There are provisions in the law saying that law enforcement can access the databases for official law enforcement purposes very generally. But according to our sources, that has not been the case. HPD says they are only verifying people's status based on these types of forms. And just to get back to the other point that Harvey made, this one-year lag that patients have to suffer, the policy is already misguided in the first place. But then to say you must wait an additional year, even if you give up your card tomorrow, in order to reapply. Again, the policy is not based on any science. These individuals are not more impaired than the next person. But then to say they must wait a year, whereas the other people under this category, they can just get a letter from their physician saying, oh, this person's fine. Whereas medical cannabis patients are blanketly denied for an additional year. The policy is not thought through, and it's very problematic.
I want to quote a Star Advertiser editorial that ran a couple of days ago by Dave Shapiro, who applied for a card, hasn't yet implemented it. But he says, nor was I made aware when I applied for my marijuana card that I'd give up constitutional rights for complying with state law instead of availing myself of readily obtainable black market pot. Do people who register know that they're going on a database that's going to be used for other purposes, Harvey? Is that what you've been hearing?
Certainly not in the past. Now, recently they have put a poster in the front window of firearms saying that if you're a medical marijuana patient, you will not get a permit. So recently that has been up there, perhaps in the last 6 months or so, which was probably driven by the fact that you couldn't get medical marijuana in Hawaii until, a month ago? Maybe a month and a half?
Maybe 6 months, yeah.
You couldn't buy them from the dispensaries, but you could grow it yourself.
I see.
But that raises an additional question where you have, you know, we've created a dispensary system. The state, again, first of all, legalized medical cannabis as a medicine in 2000. Then, 2 years ago, we legalized an official way to sell this to patients, to regulate it, to test it, to make it safer. Somehow, despite that, despite all these safeguards, we continue to hold on to this myth that this is some kind of dangerous medicine. And what's going to happen is that people who believe in their constitutional rights with regards to the Second Amendment, are they going to come out of the woodworks and say, I want to register for this medicine? No, exactly as the gentleman in the editorial said, he's going to make himself available to the black market. And that is not good for anyone. And that's going to cause issues for law enforcement. So they're causing issues for themselves.
Talking about medical marijuana, firearms, constitutional questions, we'd love to hear your calls, 941-3689 or toll-free from Neighbor Islands, 877-941-3689. And Bray in Kona joining us from one of those Neighbor Islands. Bray?
Yeah, good morning, gentlemen. You know, I just wanted to interject briefly. We're just, you know, starting this conversation. I find it terribly disturbing. I'm so glad I have yet to register because I don't trust my government. But what I really wanted to interject was this. I've seen in one day more damage done by alcohol than I've seen done by cannabis sativa in 65 years of living.
That's you'll probably hear a lot of people echo that.
Well, and I think you've put your finger on one of the ironies here. As Carl's been emphasizing, on the one hand, the state, through the legislature, has now officially recognized the use of marijuana for medical purposes as legitimate, so that as Harvey's indicated, it's a medicine. That's the state's perspective. Apparently, the federal perspective continues to be that possession and use of marijuana for any reason is criminal. The substance is a controlled substance, and therefore possession and use of it disqualifies a person from access to firearms. There's some tension, obviously, between the two principles. I don't know to what degree the police department is considering these questions from a philosophical perspective or from the standpoint of logic. I rather suspect that it's simply trying to enforce the law. But as Carl's organization has noted, the state statute on point does not require the chief of police to request voluntary surrender of firearms and ammunition by a medical marijuana user. It simply authorizes the chief of police to do that in the chief's discretion. So there's some wriggle room here. And the commission obviously is going to have a lot of questions as to what the department's policy or position is, whether there is a considered policy that it's pursuing, and what options there are.
And we look forward to hearing that actually as soon as your meeting tomorrow. Mark on Kauai is on the line with a question for us. Mark, go ahead.
Hi, gentlemen. Thank you. So my question is, as a medical cardholder myself, I'm believing here that I'm operating under the law of the state of Hawaii, but now I'm having to choose the medicine that I need, right? And or do I choose to protect my family with my other God-given right, which the country I live in? So I'm a little confused as to where I need to go, what I need to do, but I know I need both, So I think the police department, I don't know if we jumped the gun and needed to do the medical marijuana thing first, or if we had to really kind of get together with the federal side and see, how do we work together? Because again, I need both in my life to live. So that's kind of my share for this morning.
Well, Mark, what you're highlighting here is an incredible breach of faith between your government and your rights and your constitutional rights. This is an incredible breach of faith that they would make this a medicine. You're legal with your card to go buy it and use it as prescribed by your doctor. And now they're going to come confiscate your rightfully owned firearms and take away your Second Amendment rights. Unbelievable.
Yeah, I can second that, more from the perspective of our organization, that these medical cannabis patients are acting in good faith, and they are giving a lot of information to the government. This information is potentially available to federal law enforcement as well. So they're taking great risks for many reasons in order to get better, to heal themselves, and the state recognizes that. So, the biggest concern we have really at this point is that it seems to be an increasing number of these denials happening. We've gone back and looked at the data since the law was passed, and initially this happened maybe once or twice a year across the state. Now we're seeing this happening by the dozens, and I think the main reason for that is just that the database exists and that law enforcement has been using it in a way that we are not quite sure of yet. We're going to find out, thanks to Commissioner Levinson, tomorrow, how are they doing this, how have they been doing this, and why have they been doing this, because this undermines faith in that system. And I understand Mark's perspective.
As a lawyer and a former state Supreme Court justice, I feel the need to respond to something that Harvey just said. The right to bear arms is not a God-given right. I rather doubt that the deity has any particular familiarity with firearms. But the right derives from the Second Amendment to the United States Constitution, which at least until recent years, and as early as 1939, expressly viewed the Second Amendment as a collective right, the right to bear arms being necessary to the preservation and efficiency of a well-regulated militia. The High Court changed its view, as we all know, in recent years, and deemed the Second Amendment an individual right, not merely a collective right that is a function of the necessity for well-ordered militias. But the fact remains that, constitutional right or no, no court has ever ruled that the right is unfettered. The right to bear arms is subject to all sorts of exceptions and time, place, and manner restrictions and limitations. What we're dealing with now, I think, is the question whether under these particular circumstances, does it make sense to deny a citizen the right to bear arms merely because they are the holder of a legal medical marijuana card?
And also, privacy issues are the other part of this equation. And there's a caller from Hilo. Monty wants to address that. Monty, are you on the line?
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me all right?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. And I want to start off by saying that, you know, I've got nothing but respect for 99.9% of the law enforcement guys. You know, they're great guys. And the question I had was, I know there was a provision in the medical marijuana law for law enforcement to access the database. And it was always my understanding that the spirit of that law, or maybe I just assumed, was so that when they were doing their compliance and enforcement missions and they found plants that were tagged, they would be able to get to the database and say, well, is this a legal certification, or are these just numbers that somebody put on a tag, which I don't think is unreasonable. I think that just to do a blanket thing to access the database to see who has what, I think that's in violation of the spirit of that provision for the law enforcement guys to access the database. And I was wondering if you would speak to that.
Carl.
Sure. Thank you, Monty. I just wanted to be clear about one thing. We don't know or even think that HPD is kind of accessing the database, or that Department of Health is granting access to the database sort of for no reason arbitrarily. If that is the case, it would be terrible. It would be in violation of the law, as you suggest. But still, what is happening remains troubling. We don't know in the past, again, how they have been accessing it and for what specific reason. You're absolutely right that the spirit of the law and the way it's been used hitherto is to check on a patient's status. If they come across an individual with a certain amount of medical cannabis, you got to check that. If you come across a grow site, you got to check how many plants do they have? Are they in compliance with the law? That's how it's been used up to this point. If we make this one exception and target this group because they have firearms based on junk science, if even that, then are there other exceptions in the pipeline? Are they going to make other exceptions because they want to check? Do they want to check for impaired driving, for example, in order to see how much does a patient buy at a dispensary? There's a lot of ways they could access it for official law enforcement purposes with some kind of justification. And we're worried about setting a precedent here, really, beyond the firearms issue.
And in that connection, I, for one, as a member of the police commission, I'm interested in the department's policy regarding accessing that database, what guidelines it follows. to my knowledge, that's not an issue that has ever come to the attention of the police commission. So again, we're at the starting gate on that one. But no pun intended, that's something we need to get into the weeds about.
Harvey, I'm guessing that you've heard concerns from your members as to this very thing. How did I get out? How did they find out about me? What did I, you know, I sign up for a medical database and suddenly I'm a target. Have you?
We've gotten that. I've gotten a lot of calls in the last
along
week.
Along those lines?
Why did this happen? What do I do? How do I handle it? And I don't have a definitive answer of how that happened, because many of them will tell me, I haven't applied for a permit in years. And bingo, I get this letter. So it isn't only driven by, did I apply for a new permit?
And Renee in Honolulu is on the line with a question related to bureaucracy, I believe. Renee?
Hi. Thank you so much for having this talk. I really miss Town Square, so this is very exciting for me. I was wondering, how is this emblematic of a failure of bureaucracy? Because if this is about protecting people's lives, I believe, somebody should have been in consultation with someone like a surgeon general, somebody who understands that medical marijuana is not just for mental health, but it's also for people who have severe pain. It just seems like there needs to be some oversight on this. And HPD has been having at least some pretty bad PR problems recently with dealing with corruption. And, this just sort of begs the question, who benefits from medical marijuana patients feeling like their rights are being violated and that they really aren't being protected, they're being stigmatized? It certainly probably isn't the police. It sort of, pits them against each other, which is the wrong thing to do, I believe. I'm just wondering how does one turn this sort of crisis into an opportunity and say, well, maybe there should be more mental health advocates working with HPD? I'm just wondering what your thoughts are on that.
Well, one sense, I don't want to get started on this subject because I've got some very strong feelings about it. Personally, I've believed for years that if one wanted to set out to undermine American society, one couldn't do a better job than establish the drug policy that has been instituted legislatively both at the national and the state level. But it is what it is at the moment, and hopefully will become more enlightened in the future. In the meantime, the question is, what are the circumstances, or what is motivating the police department to issue these letters to holders of medical marijuana cards? Is it being done in an optimal or even desirable fashion? As a member of the commission, I just don't know yet. But hopefully, we'll be learning a lot in a very short time.
Lloyd in Haiku has a point to raise. Lloyd, are you there?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead.
Thank you. So this is a very intelligent discussion and very important. And for the commissioner, here's another point that perhaps has never been raised that affects our society in a very deep way. How is it that the police can encourage a felony and at the same time encourage education and expect there to be respect? The fact is, you have to sign a form that says you admit to doing a felony if you hold onto the card at the same time that you have a gun, registered firearm, according to your Second Amendment rights. This is a terrible example for our society. The second point on this is, each mayor, and here in Maui, Mayor Alan Arapaia will be going around hugging babies and shaking hands because he wants to be elected to the council. His letter is also given to the person with a medical marijuana license that comes to get a gun permit. And his letter supports what the police decision is. So let's not forget, that it's these politicians that are not standing up for the medical science that our state promotes over a abysmal, terrible federal law. These people are in cahoots as well.
Well, if I could
Lloyd,
jump
thanks
in.
Thanks for calling in. Please, Carl.
Sure. I mean, I think the last two callers make some really salient points about this being a teachable moment. This is an opportunity for advocates. Perhaps, you know, we'd call them unusual allies or strange bedfellows. You know, Harvey and I don't think we've worked together in the past. And it's really interesting to see that we're seeing eye to eye here. And for these patients to be stigmatized in this way is just so troubling that I hope that we can tomorrow at the police commission make some of these points and ask questions. You know, what's the basis for this policy? Why does the Attorney General's report, when it discusses these denials, list medical cannabis patients under mental impairment and mental incompetency? What's the basis for that? Why are they denied a permit for an additional year? What's the basis for that? Why are they lumped together with people who have proven diseases? It's very troubling, and it doesn't seem thought through at all. So I really appreciate the callers taking the time to make their points, and I hope that people can turn up tomorrow at the police commission, perhaps ask a few questions.
Harvey, I want to circle back to something. I raised a point somewhat facetiously at the start of the show, you know, the whole idea of raising the specter of they're coming for your guns, and that I'm sure you've heard that widely dismissed over the years as, you know, a fear-mongering. And yet this is kind of out of that template, you know, that you've been you folks have been warning about. Yeah.
Well, it is, and there have been many other examples when we have hurricanes on the mainland, like in Florida, and all of a sudden the mandate of the police force is to go out and confiscate every gun you get your hands on. They have the database, they go out and they confiscate them. Absolutely illegal, and it was stopped, but way after it had happened in mass. So here's somebody with no electricity, no power, no water, no anything, and the only way to defend themselves and family is with a firearm that just walked back into a police car simply because you had it. And this is not much different than that.
Dealing with issues of law, medical marijuana, firearms, and dealing with laws, we happen to have a lawmaker on the line with us. Matt Lopresti. Matt.
Aloha. Can you hear me?
Yes. Aloha. What would you want to add?
Yeah, I was made aware of this issue by one of my staffers, Randy Gauntz, and he's a veteran. And, you know, out in Neva Beach, we have a lot of veterans who I believe are also medical marijuana card holders because they don't want to be hooked on opioids, right? And I was really disturbed by this. I'm probably one of the least likely pro-gun advocates, but I don't see it as a gun issue. It's more of a privacy and a health issue. We talked to the Department of Health, and they made it very clear that they're not supposed to provide any block data containing registered medical marijuana users, but they do provide law enforcement access for very specific purposes, and that's only to verify whether or not somebody has a – basically, they can look it up, and there's three responses. Yes, they have state permission. No, they don't, or their card is out of date. That's it. They're not supposed to use it for anything else. But the way the law is written, perhaps it does. It may be written broad enough to have some really vagueness there that I think we really need to take a closer look at.
Well, if you'll forgive a gratuitous suggestion or observation, Representative Lopresti, it wouldn't hurt my feelings any if the legislature generally approached the matter of drug policy less from a law enforcement perspective and more from a harm reduction and public health perspective. I would be surprised if you did not have views along those general lines. So to turn the tables, what do you think the odds are of turning the legislative ship around in terms of what it sees as the top priority with respect to drug policy?
You're asking me that. That's a very broad question. I mean, first and foremost, I mean, I think we have to look at many people who will use drugs as more of an issue, not related to criminal, but rather addiction, if you're talking about larger drug policy. But I think that's beyond the scope of this conversation, which is about how just merely getting a prescription for a drug somehow tags you for having a constitutional right limited. And I think that's very dangerous.
And I think if I could quickly jump in, thank you for calling in, Representative Lopresti. I think there's actually a precedent issued by the Hawaii Supreme Court a few years ago related to this. In the Woodhull versus State case, an individual who was transporting their medical cannabis was apprehended at the Kona International Airport. And basically the justices determined that the language in the statute was pretty vague, and they interpreted it in favor of the patient. And it seems in this case that there is definitely some absent language in the medical cannabis statutes and maybe the administrative rules that are vague or they're just silent. And I think it would be really welcome if we could try to address this in the next legislative session. That would kind of sort of help deal with whatever the law enforcement agencies locally are trying to do, which we still don't know exactly why. But the state law is kind of what underlies this. So. Thank you.
And that harkens to the state states' rights. You know, the states have rights. The states created the federal government, and they set aside rights. So how is it that the feds now are going to come in here and create criminals and disqualified people in confiscation of goods when the states' rights preclude that?
Apart from Hamilton and Jefferson, we also have Carla on Hawaii Island who has a question about comparisons to other states. Carla, go ahead.
Hi. I was going to tell you about my sister in Texas, how they're walking around with guns and like cowboys. But actually, I just want to say something. I just became aware listening to you, your conversation, which is incredible. Really appreciate it. That what appears to be happening is conflicting laws are actually doing only terrorizing people, number one, putting drug dealers back in business, number two, and making a plant illegal, like an herb, like oregano or basil. It's just a plant. I mean, get real. It is a plant. It's not a pill that's made in a pharmaceutical laboratory.
Well, that's been part of the discussion of marijuana laws going back for quite some time.
Sure. And it certainly is a plant, but sort of for the purposes of this discussion, legally it is a medicine in the state of Hawaii. And what we're seeing here is kind of it's an interesting situation. It's pretty unique here to Hawaii because we do have the requirement that every firearms licensee register with the state, if I'm not mistaken.
Correct.
It's a little bit different than other states. And we also have this registry database for the medical cannabis patients. And it seems like the two are meeting in a way that perhaps was not intended. And, you know, it's just not necessarily where we want to go with databases. We want to have them for specific reasons. We can discuss them individually, but to kind of cross-check them for this purpose when it's not explicitly authorized is problematic. It sets a bad precedent.
Has this been done anywhere else, Harvey, to your knowledge?
Of the confiscation?
Yeah.
Not to my knowledge.
But you did, you referred to Florida where a database was used to have people actually come after guns. So
Yes, the database.
That's the database of registered gun owners.
That's correct. And so that was the registration process that led them to go confiscate guns from registered gun owners.
This is a medical database, so that's what you're saying is that qualitatively different.
But we also have, I mean, Harvey is the expert here on our state's firearms laws, but we also have a stricter registration requirement than many other states.
Absolutely. We register long guns, which would be rifles and shotguns, which is virtually unheard of on the mainland. And that happened in, 1994, I believe, is when they started registering long guns in the state of Hawaii. Handguns forever and ever, way, way back.
Yeah.
So very little change there. In a lot of states with CCW, which is a concealed carry license, you can walk into any gun store and buy any gun you want, including a handgun. No waiting period, no anything. We are a long ways away from that. And that's a whole nother point of argument, whether access that free access is good or not. I like it. If you have a permit and you've been checked out, you ought to be able to buy a gun whenever you want it. This waiting period, cooling off period, is nonsense. If you already have a firearm, what could that possibly accomplish? Nothing.
But from a broader perspective, I think what we're seeing, as I think the caller is suggesting, is a clash between two broad policy perspectives. On the one hand, Hawaii does have among the strongest gun control laws in the nation. I personally support them. But on the other hand, I mean, for example, in order to transport a firearm from one place to another, you have to break it down.
No.
It has to be contained
In a case.
In a rigid container. I think the ammunition and the firearm have to be separated. As in when you're traveling from your home to the firing range to use your gun. On the other hand, the legislature is beginning to take more and more of a public health perspective with respect to legitimate uses of marijuana, and I predict eventually with respect to the recreational use of marijuana in general. Well, the public health approach and the criminalization law enforcement approach can be at odds with one another, can clash, and I think this is a perfect illustration of when that can happen.
And I think if you have this kind of broad database of all firearms registrations, very different kinds for different purposes, I may or may not think that's a good idea. But to then use all those registrations and then cross-check that with all medical cannabis patients who are also individuals with different ailments taking different strains of cannabis and say, if the two match, disqualified. That is just not a policy that's worth supporting. I mean, that is a blanket policy based on I don't know what. Convenience, I would argue.
Which is precisely why I think the commission is going to be getting into this, inquiring into this subject, having literally just learned about it.
A caller from KHO has raised an interesting issue because every time you get a prescription for a medication, you're part of a database. Bob from KHO, is that kind of what you were thinking about?
Yeah. I mean, I have two issues here. One of those is if we want to say why is this happening, and my theory would be, you know, Hawaii is a very left-leaning state. There's a lot of good things about that, but part of that whole platform is no guns. And so now if you leave it to the bureaucrats and say, let's look at the current tools and the current laws that we have and see if you can find a way to use them to get guns off the street. So for anybody who's worried about the potential of the future and future legislation when they say, oh, no, this won't affect guns, that's not the purpose of this. Believe me, depending on the administration, depending on whether you're leaning left or right, the people who are in charge can take a committee and say, look at the laws we have. How do we get guns off the street? And this is one possible example. And the second thing I wanted to say real quickly is, if you really want to regulate and fear of what people might do when they're medicated, I mean, let's start with Ambien, not marijuana. That's my comment. I'd like to hear what you have to say off the air. Thank you.
Well, again, the caller is correct. You are registered if you take certain medications, controlled substances. The physician will enter it into a database, and the patient will have that information that they're taking Ambien or prescription painkillers, opioids. But those are protected by very strong privacy rights. And I'm not aware that law enforcement is trying to access that database to say, hey, this person is taking opioid painkillers, so en masse, they should be denied a gun permit. Because there are, first of all, that's an absurd policy. Second of all, there are stronger protections for those patients than for medical cannabis patients. So I think that raises a lot of problems, and I hope that we'll begin to address those.
If I could throw in one interesting point that directly related to drugs, and that is that all the mass shootings, when they catch the people or they shoot them in the act, they're all on psychotropic drugs. all of them, every single one of the mass shooters was on some form of psychotropic drug. Maybe that's a place they ought to be looking instead of the medical marijuana people.
You know, Harvey, one of the things that's interesting to me about this discussion is that as a gun rights advocate, you've been, you know, in the media and probably in the public mind, you sort of, gun rights activists have sort of balkanized into a certain area as, you know, coming from the right. And suddenly your issues are everyone's issues where this, when this discussion comes up.
It's an interesting
issue. Do you feel that?
Yes,
You know, that society sort of moving in your direction a little bit?
Yeah, I've never been a marijuana advocate, but I'm a very strong advocate for people that need the medicine, not the recreational. I'm not a proponent of recreational marijuana, but I agree that there has been a coalescing of forces here, and hopefully that will have a positive impact on the commission.
And what we're talking about now is how legitimate databases are being used. Are they being used properly or improperly? And that's a fair question. And we're going to be looking into it. And hopefully we'll know a lot more in a short time than we know now.
Let's, Edward on Maui just, I think, is responding to what you just said about the correlation between psychotropic drugs and mass shootings. Edward, are you there?
Yes, sir, I am.
What's on your mind, Edward?
Well, I was speaking with Amber. She connected me right as I got the last sentence of the previous caller mentioning the psychotropics, and I was asking her the same thing in terms of anecdotally, if not statistically, so many of the mass murders and killings, particularly with young people, have been with people on psychotropics such as Xanax or other mind-control drugs and or on opiates. And I'm wondering, where is the push coming from law enforcement or the health officials toward regulating people that are taking these drugs with guns instead of a harmless drug like marijuana?
Carl, what do you think about that?
I think that's another question that can be raised tomorrow, I think. Again, in the Attorney General's report, medical cannabis patients with every ailment, no matter how much medicine they take, are lumped under this category of people who do suffer from genuine addictions and have genuine mental health issues. Those are the kind of individuals that Harvey was referring to. And that would be certainly a better use of law enforcement prioritization than what seems to be happening currently. So I certainly would hope that they are also focusing on that. But even by focusing on this in the first place, it just seems utterly misguided. And it's sort of it's going after the low-hanging fruit of the patients. And if I were one of the dispensary licensees who had invested a lot of money in setting up a dispensary, given money to the state to get my license, gone through all this rigmarole to set up this system, while the state is discouraging some of these individuals from becoming patients, the state is saying some people can't get a card, so they won't become your customers in the future. It's just problematic. You know, I think the state needs to get its message kind of lined up and find out what it wants to do. My understanding is they have a very strong public health approach when it comes to medical cannabis. But sometimes, as in this case, it seems like there are mixed messages. And then local law enforcement has to figure out why it's doing things and tell us. And I hope to find out tomorrow.
Let's move toward a kind of summation of, we probably, as usual with these things, we've probably raised as many questions as we've answered. But it's clear that this police department letter has raised issues of privacy rights, gun rights, you know, health issues, health information, privacy of health information. What kind of things do you see going forward, Harvey?
Well, I would hope that our government will put it in gear, starting with the police commission and the police force and the legislature, and work on cleaning up the language if that's what's going to help this law work. And, you know, try to look at a logic stream that includes the health of the patient that's a medical marijuana patient. And some of the things that came up in my discussion with all the people that called me was, how do you differentiate between a real medical marijuana patient and somebody who's just doing it to not get put in jail? That's a problem from my perspective. And I think that's something that can be worked out with the doctors that are issuing the permits, if in fact that's a real issue.
Stephen?
Well, I don't want to sound like a broken record, but a problem has come to light, or at least a question has arisen, and we need to answer it. I doubt that the Honolulu Police Department is acting out of nefarious motives. I suspect that it's attempting to enforce the law. The law, as we, I think, are beginning to agree, has some ambiguities in it, and maybe some embedded policies that require rethinking. But deprivation of the right to bear arms because one is a medical marijuana user in and of itself doesn't make a lot of sense to me. I personally would not place medical cannabis patients under the category of mental incompetence / impairment as the Department of the Attorney General apparently does.
Stephen, forgive me, I have to interrupt you, and I have to thank all three of you for being with us this morning. We've run out of time. Carl Berquist, the Drug Policy Forum, Harvey Gerwick of the Hawaii Rifle Association, and Steve Levinson, a member of the Honolulu Police Commission. Thanks to everyone for taking part in this discussion.
You're welcome.
Especially thanks to our callers. As I said, we've probably raised as many issues as we've answered, but that's kind of what the show's all about. Thanks to everyone for listening.